And, you know, there's a limit on all the facilities down there. I don't know why in the world we would want to triple the Phoenix thing.
What did they want the 12, what were the new positions kind of things?
I think what happened is that they had such a stream of people coming in that they had to, and also the planners are thinking about, you know, greater wiring diagrams and more people.
Is this planners in the Phoenix?
Yeah, okay. At the national level.
Okay.
So Jim agreed with me, and I don't know whether he talked to Evan or just told me, you tell those turkeys up there that not send any more people down here. Send them to the other areas.
What kind of involvement did you have with John Wilbur and his crew people?
Well, at the province level, we had almost had daily involvement with the province agency advisor and the SEAL team leader.
That would be the province officer and,
province
and
officer,
his crew advisor.
Yeah.
Okay.
And this was either trying to help them get stuff, or they getting stuff for us for another area, or going over the potential for operation.
You said sometimes you called in B-52s. Then you give
me
an example of that?
Yeah, what I was alluding to there is, in working with the G-2, Ted Grime and the Canto advisory group, we were trying to piece together patterns of the movement of those main force guerrilla battalions.
Right.
Because that constituted the single greatest danger to a district.
Okay.
Or even a province. So the idea was that if we could put the fear of God in them, that we knew their pattern, and we could influence them that they should never assemble as a battalion, then our forces could resist a company size attack.
Mm-hmm.
And that would, you know, pretty much cut back their combat capability, as opposed to being able to operate at a battalion level force. And when those facts came together, he would coordinate a 52 or an airstrike on that area. And you could do a 52 strike, you know, pretty easily. And if I remember correctly, one of them occurred up in in Kenwa. It was either, I think it was right between Kenwa and Den Tung province.
Okay.
That there was pretty good evidence that one of the VC, that one of the guerrilla battalions had assembled in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And Ted put a 52 strike in, and they went in later to do damage assessment and say it looked like a butcher shop. And thereafter, we had pretty good evidence that the battalions were doing just what we wanted them to do. They were not assembling in larger than company-sized forces. We continued to try and do that from the summer on in 68. And we started getting in some pretty good defectors because of that pressure, and the overall coordination was working.
So you probably didn't have to do that very often then?
No.
You know, just...
And then every now and then, the ops people, they would schedule 52s anyway.
Right, just because, apart from anything that had to do with Phoenix.
Right.
Okay. I had always heard that the most successful Phoenix operations were in the Delta.
Well, we think they were.
Yeah,
we do,
okay.
And there are a number of reasons to think why. One is that even at our level, we were a cohesive team. We worked together.
You and Ward. And
Ward and they, as a rule, the guys over. You see, I think our area was unique in that, number one, we, except for the 9th Division over in Kenwa, we didn't have any U.S. troops in the Delta.
Stop.
Yeah. And I think that that it's a an indication of at one point in time there were a group of people that came together that recognized the common purpose.
Yeah.
And we're just determined to work together to produce some results. The province chiefs were appointed by the president. And there's, you know, all kind of rumors about some bought the jobs, and there were other kinds of arrangements made.
Mm-hmm.
There were businesses and activities that flourished, having never been bothered in the province.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was obvious that someone was being paid off.
Did you have anything to do with military security service MSS people on the Vietnamese side, or with that, or did you just deal exclusively with?
We tried to deal with every one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And in the case of MSS, if I was able to get to the guy through food or through the Army security unit,
mm-hmm,
in the Delta, which a friend of mine commanded, I would try and do that to push an operation, or try and find out what they knew,
mm-hmm,
that we were not being informed of.
Okay.
And the whole time I was there, I was convinced that there was a lot of unilateral reporting that did not get into the U.S. system, whether it was the Phoenix or the U.S. system at all. And
mm-hmm,
it probably had to do with the different axes people had to grind.
What about Special Branch? Do you have anything to do with them?
Well, through the agency, because okay, agency kept tabs.
All right, that was, Ward had a deputy who did Special Branch, and then and so on down the line,
yeah,
province and stuff.
You see,
like
there's
that.
a little different situation that prevailed in the Delta when,
okay,
that made my job easier vis-a-vis the CA people.
Okay.
The chief of station in Saigon, I had worked with in Europe.
Shackley?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And after I had been down there about 3 months, Jim and Andy came back from a meeting. And I went up to talk to him about this or that, and I think it was Andy looked at me and he said, you know, Doug, you can get anything that you want out of this outfit. And I said, how's that, Andy? He said, well, Ted Shackley said that you were probably the best agent handler he had ever known.
Okay.
So,
okay,
Ted kind of indirectly established my bona fides with the company.
I see. Okay. All right, what about Special Branch? Were they giving good information? Weren't they the people who were staffing the PIOX and the DIOX? Wasn't it Special Branch people?
Well, it was kind of hard at times to determine just who was operating in that environment because
okay,
of the it seemed to me that each district, although they had a similar organizational structure, it depended on the personality of the district chief.
Okay.
And quite often the main mission of that Special Branch guy there may have been to keep tabs on the other Arvin people. It goes back to, you know, the question you asked earlier about the effectiveness of our people.
Okay.
Without a fairly decent background in the intelligence business, one does not very quickly develop a healthy degree of skepticism of a person or the information that person is giving to the individual. And this is one of the faults that I always felt existed within Special Forces, is that there was a perpetual immaturity on the part of their people because they were so fired up to get the job done, and I don't want to take any credit at all away from them in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the same way in the police business.
Mm-hmm.
It's that old cynical detective or investigator that's been in there for a long time, and he can smell a deal before it goes down. That's typical of our culture. I mean,
yeah.
we're raised to not really question a person's motive or be suspect or
to be polite,
yeah,
and respectful. Is there anything more you want to add about the training program at Wong Pao? When did you get around to working on that? I would have thought that would have come out of Parker's staff.
Well, they finalized and they put the program together. We mm-hmm. Based on my own background, and after a month down in the Delta,
mm-hmm.
there are things that seemed to me needed to be definitely covered in the curriculums, and I drafted up some notes and sent them up, and then was, I think Jim volunteered me to make guest appearances at the training sessions, and I think I went over there for two or three of their classes. I knew that in 62,
mm-hmm.
I was teaching at Fort Holabird, and we had a crash requirement to train intelligence advisors. Now, well, that's what the individual was alluding to. At the time that I left, I had the comfortable feeling that we had done a tremendously improved job in the Delta,
okay.
That there was a potential for more of that. In spite of MACV getting more directly involved in the program. And my one concern was that now that MACV, the main battalion war had disappeared,
yeah.
They had nothing really to report on, and they now turned their attention to the Phoenix program. And they were going to bury it with paper and other directives and restraints.